the Lifetime Athlete Podcast, where performance meets longevity. The will to win, refuse to lose, do what you love, hunt, fish, hike, lift, bike, ski, run, play sports, play with your grandkids, become and remain hard to kill on the playing field and in the game of life. Training, nutrition, lifestyle, gear. Take the athletic avenue into wellness. Putting more life into your years. I'm your host, John Zombro. Let's kick ass at life for life. Hi there, and welcome to episode number 343 of the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. John here, and thanks so much for being a part of this community and this team that we're creating, a really empowering and inclusive group, which is my mission, and I think it's shared by so many who get together with us on the pod and in other means. One of the great things that happened just last week, I've got to share it because it's so top of mind. When I think about this platform being really an ideal fitness for life avenue for the maturing or evolving human, well, something really came to light for me. I was doing a workshop or giving a presentation in the Backpacking Light Trail Days online seminar. And I had participated last year and kind of talked a lot about the scientific models behind training and health first and wellness that we use here at TLA and how they could apply specifically to a backpacking athlete, and certainly encouraging folks like that to view themselves as athletes, embrace that inner beast and celebrate it. Well, this year I was tasked with providing a sample training program. I mean, I think right away, I would say, you know, when we talk about Rome, there are roads to Rome. It really only matters that you get to Rome. Doesn't matter how you get there. So there's tons of ways to train any athlete for any outcome. And we always try to take into account things like genetics and preferences and budget and schedule and da, da, da. But we did a talk about 12 weeks to trek ready. So basically this was a simple conditioning program that was designed around two key workouts. And, you know, one was obviously a backpacking, a loaded packing or rucking session. And then the other one was this gym supplemental conditioning program. But in order to keep it simple, I limited myself to one implement, which was a medium weight kettlebell per the individual's ability level. So we went through all that, and that was fun. And at the end, we had I nailed it as far as coming in on time, and we had plenty of time for Q&A and got some great questions about nutrition and training and whatnot. But here's the point I was trying to build to start the podcast today was a lady, and I'm not going to mention her name here because I don't necessarily have her permission to do so, but she typed in a comment in the chat section, and then the host read it to conclude our session. And she basically said, I am X years old, and let's just go back to the whole maturing, evolving human. And I'm a six foot tall female, and it's always been expected of me to be an athlete. And I never liked that term. I always bristled at it. And it was an uncomfortable rebellion through much of my life. But then she said these words, and I'm paraphrasing, so I don't want to butcher it too much, but she says, I listened to this presentation and how you talked about everyone is an athlete and using words like inclusive and empowering, and that we should find and celebrate this athlete within us. And then that gives us an athletic presence in all of our life, not just sports, fitness, or body composition, but in relationships and work and community involvement and all of those things. And she was saying this. And then she said, after this presentation, my mind has been changed. I want to be a lifetime athlete. And I mean, a tear almost came to my eyes. It was so good. And so PK, I know I didn't introduce you before because I knew I was going to launch into this long winds thing, but love you, brother. Glad you're here. And thank you for sitting through that just amazing little story.
Johnny, I love it, man. First of all, thanks for having me. excited to talk about Lean for Life today. And yeah, that is that's the stuff right there. I think that you know, a bunch of people coming together and to have that realization, have that woman articulate, it's beautiful. I think that it's fun to see. It is inspiring.
Yes, and it's exactly what we're here for. And you know, every person that's, whether you're, you know, 25, we don't have too many people who are 25 in the lifetime athlete group, but 35 and up, tons of them, and all the way up into, well, to age 80 right now. Our oldest participant in the training tribe is 80 years old, and it's pretty cool to see people really, you know, feeling good, not having a lot of pain or getting injured, joints don't hurt, but jumping around, having fun, and letting that apply to other parts of their life. So yeah, it makes it all meaningful for me, and I just want to keep growing. And so obviously, if you're listening, thank you for being here again, but if there's any way that you can leave a hopefully 5-star rating and review and share this journey with others, that's going to help drive the old algorithms and get this message out about longevity and performance and why we really can get both.
Absolutely. 5-star and leave those reviews. Let's do all that. We'll circle back to that at the end. But John, today we're going to do it a little different, I guess. You know, I'm an occasional contributor today, and you and I had talked offline about, hey, we got this new program coming out. You said Lean for Life. Let's get on and just talk about it. And so that's what we're going to do. I'm going to ask you a handful of questions as we kick this off here. But the first one is, what is Lean for Life? Just kind of set the table. Give us a little bit of context for this program.
Yeah, Lean for Life is the ultimate body composition program for the lifetime athlete. So what I mean by that is, some years back, I had a program, which actually it was quite popular, and it was called Effortless Weight Loss. And obviously the words kind of said what it was, and it used evidence-based principles to help people to, yes, lose weight, but also, you know, we were emphasizing, of course, body comp optimization, which really involves sparing or keeping your lean body mass, that muscle mass and bone density, and then losing the body fat. And we did some things with that. But over time, a lot of athletes, a lot of clients, a lot of members of our community in different levels would say, well, weight loss isn't my only consideration, or maybe I don't need to lose weight, or I lost the weight and now I'm into maintenance, or I want to gain weight. And so finally, they essentially talked me into creating a new program. You know, it borrowed a little bit from Effortless Weight Loss, but now Lean for Life gives the tools and principles to leverage nutrition with lifestyle to optimize body composition through the lifespan and to support all sorts of different things. Like, well, what if your goal is quote unquote bulking or gaining? How do you do that? How do you lose weight safely? How do you make nutritional programs sustainable? How do you support peak performance and periods of high training or intense competition? All that and more is in there. And, you know, I can go on and on, but I think I'm just going to try to answer that first question. That's what Lean for Life is.
That's perfect. Well, that leads into my second question, is that clearly this is based off of effortless weight loss. How has it changed? How has the principles, or how's it different in Lean for Life? What's new? What's better? Sort of what came out of that growth of that original foundation for this new program?
Yeah, well, effortless weight loss was based on 10 evidence-based principles or concepts, you know, things like consuming your food when the sky is light. And there's some circadian biology research to support that, and how, you know, hormones are optimized or balanced and metabolism is regulated during that. So anyway, that's just one example, and you already knew about that. But with Lean for Life, instead of having 10, originally I was thinking I was going to have 20, but I only came up with 19. And I said, well, I'm not going to make a bogus one just to make it 20. It's got 19 principles. And that's what it is. But it goes through step by step, you know, and helps anyone who kind of wants to get really what would be a big picture of, you know, this whole body composition thing, and how that we can make it empowering as well, fun almost, make it adaptable to fit each person. So, in other words, there are some people who really like structure. They like a lot of tracking and weighing and measuring of food and using spreadsheets and different kinds of apps and things. Then there are other people that, it's the same thing with workouts. They like, that stuff constrains me a little bit. I'm not into that. If I know the big picture, the big rocks, the concepts, I'm going to be fine with that. And so, what the Lean for Life program does is it goes through these various points or subtopics, and we take a look at, well, first of all, what's been the refinement of the earth-based diet? That's the diet that we use here with all of our clients, the EBD. And then we break down things like, well, okay, calories, what are they, what do they mean to us? Macronutrients, the value, or perhaps the need to be aware of liquid calories. Talk about supplements, tracking, the experience of dining as opposed to just eating, value of sleep, metabolic things, stress, relationships, fueling around workouts, planning meals, shopping, cooking. In fact, we got a cool program coming out. I'll tell you about for next month. It's a 30-day challenge. The use of what we call the flex day as opposed to a cheat day, and how that helps with sustainability. How to assess things, training, training and eating for weight loss, weight gain, supporting that peak performance, and then using the seasonality principle that we use here. And that's a double principle because it's seasons of the year and sports seasons, and we can really tweak some dials and levers to just maximize health and performance. So that's kind of a really quick overview of what Lean for Life contains.
I love that. And you're delivering it through the app.
Yeah, so the Lean for Life, blah, blah, blah. Lean for Life is exclusively available to membership subscribers in the Lifetime Athlete app. That's available on the App Store and Google Play. And the base app is free, which gives you the ability to participate in the community and search over 1,000 articles, podcasts, videos, and workouts. But if you like what you see and you decide to become a member, then you get access to all of our paid content, which includes daily fitness tips, weekly challenges, master classes, the Training Tribe daily workout system based on the annual training plan, and the courses. And of course, the first one to drop, they do so quarterly, was this Lean for Life, again, based on popular demand. So the app is it's, I think it's the next gen, for us. And I think it's very attractive and competitive regarding what's out there in, like, say, long-term health and fitness for life models, because it's comprehensive. We have a little bit of everything, including this nutritional guideline, as well as, again, some programming that's coming up to support it.
I like it. All right, John. So just it's right there in the title. If we're thinking about, what it was before effortless weight loss, which is an emphasis on losing weight just as a number on the scale, and then evolving into Lean for Life. And so I think that what I love is, like, maybe paint the picture of, like, two different individuals with different goals. Say, maybe one person does have a body comp goal. Maybe they're coming into spring break, summer swimsuit season's right around the corner. And then another person who, is thinking about adding weight in terms of the strength. Maybe contrast those two and how this program can help both of them, in different ways based on their goals.
Yeah, precisely. So Lean for Life really is, it just suggests, well, this can fluctuate, and your mileage may vary, or your needs or goals are going to be different than the next person's. And so when we look at healthy body copper, excuse me, body composition ranges, we're probably looking at something like 10 to 20% for males, and about 15 to 30% for females. And I know I've mentioned this before, but, like, with females, the range is a little broader because of reproductive physiology. And that's it's important to recognize that. But yeah, I think those are the two big unique targets that people will go after. Obviously, longer term, we get into this maintenance thing, but in the targeted realm, somebody might say, look, I want to I want to increase lean body mass. I want to gain weight. I want to gain muscle for various reasons. That could be aesthetics, but it could also be performance. It could also be with a longevity mindset. And there's an art form to doing that whereby, yes, we probably are going to gain weight. And that means that you almost have to gain a small amount of adipose tissue or body fat along with your muscle. I mean, unless a person is using a high volume of performance enhancing drugs, it's just not possible for human physiology or the metabolism to multitask and like build up muscle and cut fat at the same time. That's why historically bodybuilders have always done this, you know, like bulking and cutting types of phases. Well, but we go through like everything here has to be health first. And it's so important because there's no reason to ever want to compromise health. And so say, well, okay, we know that a gainer is going to need a couple things. A gainer is going to need a caloric surplus. And we have to figure out how, through some tweakage, you know, what's the ideal caloric surplus for that individual? So the Lean for Life program helps you to figure that out. It's like, okay, well, this is my, you know, estimated basal metabolic rate or the amount of calories that I need to, you know, consume just to basically stay alive every day. And then we've got our GDA or general daily activity. So that's got an extra component. And then we've got, you know, exercise and training, and those things, you know, will have also a revving up of the metabolism, sometimes called EPOC or excess post-exercise oxygen consumption. And so we kind of think about all those things. Like we got to make sure we've got enough calories, but we don't want that surplus to be excessive so that we're actually, you know, gaining the adipose tissue too rapidly. So there's some performance tweaking in there. Got to have the protein, got to have strategic carbohydrate utilization around exercise, because generally speaking, we're going to be using some higher intensity resistance training for gaining. Oh, and so all of that goes in. And then also, how do you monitor, you know, what's appropriate? Is it a circumferential measurement? So with gaining, that's a very popular one. Obviously the scales are there, and then checking on body composition, percent body fat. Some people, you know, have access to do that with a scale. They're not always the most accurate using that bioelectrical impedance analysis, but they do work. Calipers, underwater weighing, and of course the DEXA scans now are, you know, becoming very accessible and affordable for most people. So so we kind of look at all that, and then obviously, you know, usually there's a performance thing too, and the aesthetics thing. So, you know, how you look and how you look, feel, and perform. And then that's kind of a quick overview of gaining. Now, somebody who's trying to lose or reduce adipose tissue, first of all, I'd say it's actually kind of easy to lose weight if you use just some basic things. But to do it like safely, sustainably, healthfully, and not impair performance in the process, that's where some magic comes in. And so now we look at a very subtle caloric deficit. We look at things we can do to the metabolism to kind of keep it idling throughout the day and not stalling out by actually revving it up a little bit here and there. You're using some of those things I mentioned about, you know, circadian rhythms, and certainly it's not just consuming food during daylight hours. I mean, for the most part, if you're in Alaska in the winter, that's not going to work. But you know what I'm saying? We everything we do, we take with the proverbial grain of salt, and it's just food for thought. And those puns were totally intended. But you know, we'll look at sleep. We look at its value for hormonal regulation, relationships and stress and all of those things. And so really we want to be very protective of the organism's physiology, because fat burns in a flame of calmness. And so we got to keep that parasympathetic baseline present most of the time. Got to be smart with training when we're trying to lose. You know, if you do a ton of high intensity work, you should do some, of course, but it should be brief. But long duration, moderate to high intensity work can actually increase cortisol levels. It can send signals to the body to hold on to fat, because this clown keeps taking us to stress and depletion levels, and we might need this. And so there's a lot of magic in doing that. And protein is important for every lifetime athlete, and especially if we've got a lifetime athlete that's, you know, into the type of training that's really causing a lot of turnover you know, muscle tissue. It's most training actually, and a little bit older, and either trying to hold on to mass or not lose it. And so when you're trying to lose weight, but you don't want to lose muscle, protein is a power lever where if you're getting close to that 1 gram of protein per pound of lean body mass per day, it's research has shown this is very effective at making weight loss, you know, again, mostly fat, keeping it sustainable for the long term. Protein really helps with satiety. Lots of things go into this. And obviously, like I could do, you know, a whole mini course just answering some questions on the podcast, but people don't deserve that. So I feel like, okay, I gave a reasonably suitable answer to that question, and then I
Oh
should.
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I love the contrast there because those are two wildly different performance, fitness, body comp goals, but the principles, the program can apply to either one of those individuals. So I just think it shows the flexibility in how you've evolved it, and you know, in both cases, lean and strong is the goal. It's just like what that means to you relative to your goals. Okay, so here's a question. Don't want to give away the farm, of course. You know, we want people to check out the program, but is there a single principle that you would pluck out of there that you could just say right now and that everyone listening can start doing today to help any goal that they have fitness-wise? And maybe just allude to it, you know, or tease it, but is there something that pops to mind that is in Lean for Life that everyone can benefit from?
Yes, and I would flesh it out very clearly. It's the earth-based diet. So the earth-based diet or EBD is it's really it's it, you're getting 80% there if you're following most of the principles that are in there. So I won't go over all of them just because it could be boring, but I don't mind sharing a bit. So, you know, we go back in time, and I have, you know, been trying out, studying and testing all sorts of the diets that were popular. Some with clients, some on myself, of course, and you know, in learning, studying, not knowing it all, being wrong sometimes, all of that's important to be humble and be a lifelong learner, have that growth mindset. But ultimately, what happened recently was the camps sort of divided, almost they drew a line in the proverbial sand, and then we had the animal-based groups or camps, and then the plant-based. And so, you know, you can put that on a continuum, obviously, or, you know, a normal distribution and say, oh, the further out you go, the more extreme it is. So the extremist of the animal-based might just be like straight up carnivore, nothing else. And then the extreme vegan. So, okay, we got an example there. Well, I started looking at that and I said to myself, well, those are statistical outliers. Neither of those extremes are actually consistent with evolutionary biology. What we know from you know, anthropology, there's lots of data to say that the human is an obligate omnivore. Now, yeah, some of us, probably myself included, might do a little better on the animal-based side of the mean, but that doesn't mean that I don't think that, you know, we should be eating some plant products. But so that I originally started calling it the planet-based diet, but in conversation, people kept thinking I was saying plant-based. So I changed it to earth-based, and that's where all this came from. Well, the earth-based diet is really simple because it's looking at foods that fit these descriptor words that we all are already aware of, you know, whole, fresh, local, seasonal, natural, organic, cage-free, pasture-raised, grass-fed, grass-finished. There's a long list here, sustainably caught. And so we're not trying to create food snobs, and we want to be respectful of everyone's, you know, budget and availability where they live and around this world. And so, yeah, I mean, we're going to try to do the best we can. But if we're just thinking mainly we're pulling foods from the earth that look like they still came from the earth, they're not too far removed, don't have fancy packaging, space-age looking packaging, long ingredient lists with things we can't pronounce. You know, it's like if you're going to buy eggs, you buy eggs at the store, or maybe it's steak, or it's chicken, or it's broccoli. I mean, it's like there are no, the ingredient is the thing. So that's good. It passes the great grandmother test, or maybe great great at this point, that you know, your ancestors very recently would have had available, grown it, bartered for it, purchased it, prepared it, ate it recognized it. So that's a lot of this earth-based stuff. Well, what we do is we've got that criteria. It's like, okay, most of the time, a durable lifetime athlete can get away with some things here and there. I'm not saying you got to be a saint or a Spartan or anything like that, but it's like most of the time, if you're picking from these foods, you're going to do pretty darn well. Then the next thing up is to say, well, okay, well, how do I function best and feel my best? Is that being a little more plant-based, still eating some animal products because that's essential, or is it more animal-based? Then we go into, well, what if you have, any food sensitivity. So you might try an elimination diet. There's a way to do that. And then, find out, oh, well, if you're sensitive to nightshade plants, like I am, for example, I could be careful of those. So forth, so on. For some people, it's dairy, it's other things. But the idea is that we refine that earth-based diet to get it to a level that works best for us. And obviously then that automatically gives us the opportunity to leverage macros. And so some people will just do better on higher carb, lower fat. We usually never go after protein. We say that's protein's the target. You're never really needing to change that. You always want that to be at that optimal level. That's not a high level, because high has a negative connotation. It's a proper level for protein. But back to like fats and carbs, it's like, yeah, some people are just going to do better, especially if they're doing chronic, as in the term of like frequent, often, either hard or moderate intensity, longer duration types of training. That's the carbohydrate metabolism tends to fuel that a little better. Now, on the other hand, if a person says, oh, I do better on a higher fat, lower carb diet, it seems like there's more satiety there. I can control my appetite and calories a little better. It seems to be fine for either low intensity exercise, or when you do, you can still do occasionally explosive or intense things, but fairly brief with like long rest or recovery intervals in terms of days between them. So your body can kind of restock glycogen. Yeah, works fine. So I don't say, hey, you got to eat like high carb, low carb. We figure out how it works best for that individual. And this is the other part of the earth-based diet. It might not be static. It's not static throughout the year. Things might change, just like the seasons. And so at times when you're really getting after it more, you might switch up some of your stuff. And then like maybe every year we go through a period where it's a postseason, it's not much training. Maybe that's happening in the winter. That's not a bad time to do a short-term low-carb exploration. So yeah, so that's all a part of Lean for Life. And it's really this idea that we have this powerful tool called the earth-based diet, where, I'm not saying once in a while, you could have a piece of birthday cake or wedding cake. Why not? Of course, live life. But that's just, if that's only once a week, that's really awesome, because then most of those foods that we're consuming are EBD, highest quality, good for our bodies, good for the earth. Yeah, man.
I love it. John, that's great. That's fantastic. That was, if that doesn't get you psyched up to get into the program and just dig deeper into the EBD, then I don't know what will. Excuse me. Okay. I'm going to flip this here. So this is, it's not that crazy of a question, but what do people get wrong when they're embarking? I'm not saying people that are using Lean for Life. I'm saying people that excuse me, sorry about that. People that are embarking on a body comp or, a program that's in the realm of Lean for Life, what do they get wrong? And what does a program like Lean for Life do to help them address that and get back on track?
Yeah, I think the key word there is probably sustainability. If a program is too restrictive and confining, it's just too difficult to maintain. And so and some of this is very personality driven as well. And we have to match those things up. But like, for example, if somebody says, well, I'm going to go on a 1500 calorie per day diet, that's pretty restrictive, unless you're a very small person who's not very active, That's probably not enough calories over time. And certainly the micronutrient density might not be enough because of again, just a small amount of food. So people do that though. They restrict calories to a point where, oh man, it's just a miserable experience. But then what happens is the brilliant metabolism says, okay, well, this is the world we're living in. So we've got to slow down the metabolism because this is all we've got to run on. And so ultimately, a person who's doing too much restriction, caloric restriction, will fail in that they start to feel terrible, just lethargic and no energy, and the weight's not coming off. And so it's a bummer all the way around because you're suffering, you're not having any joy in your eating, and you're not getting your goals either. So that's kind of a bummer. I also see that from a training perspective, where we've got people that are super motivated, and they really want to do good things. And so they believe, so I think some of the misinformation that we're exposed to societally, more is better. And more is not always better. There's like a little bit's good, more from there starts to be better, but then more beyond that maybe is not so good. And it's a lot of context there. But yeah, I feel like we need to have activity, overall daily activity levels plus exercise and training be very appropriate for that person and the goals, especially around body composition. And then it becomes okay, like fitting and working. So we've got the right amount of nutrients, the macros that are working best for that person. We've got, enough calories to, sustain the individual while still having a deficit per se. Those things are critically important. And I also think that there's a lot of mixed messages out there too about just, like being tough, being mentally tough, doing hard things, type two fun. Yeah, I mean, all that's, I believe in all of that. But I also believe, hell man, doing fun things is pretty nice too. And enjoying life and celebrating it. And so there's a way where, sure, we can challenge ourselves in certain capacities and have confidence to know that we are durable, versatile beasts. Yes. But your diet and training behaviors don't always have to be that. They can actually, you can have a few treats here and there, and it's not going to ruin the system. And then also on the training thing, it's like, yeah, you can push yourself and should in a lot of cases, but man, you should never have like chronic fatigue, exhaustion, joint pain. That's just programming done poorly, in my opinion.
I love all that. Here's my last question. It's a little bonus question. I'm wondering if you can paint us a picture, a success story of someone who's you've trained or coached, who's used these Lean for Life principles and has had some success or a great deal of success, just as a way to sort of finish and put a face to the name here.
Oh yeah, I mean, I chuckle to myself because I've had great learning experiences and great interactions with people, and I guess I've got two that I would like to share. And I worked with a gal a few years back who, this was, well, it was not that long ago. It's just a couple of years because all this has been in development. But just picture someone who is mid 50s, a corporate executive, busy life, three kids. One of them's about to start college. The other two, high school and middle school. A good marriage, but a relationship that requires participation and investment, community involvement. Like a person who's really doing a lot of things and really trying to, just fulfill lots of professional and civic demands or requirements or goals, or however we look at that, and wanting to be just, great. So, this is not at all uncommon. Said, well, she gave me this assignment. She says, well, there are parts of life that are really good, but I haven't been able to figure out this training and body composition thing. I've just got this stubborn 25, 28 pounds that just don't want to go away. And, it's, It's really bugging me. So I, you know, we obviously go through in these coaching relationships, we find things and we analyze data. So here's what I found. Obviously, this is a busy person, and stress is something that's often there. And so, you know, trying to recognize that. So we put in, first of all, a few tools like, okay, you know, whether you want to get like a meditation app, which she did, or something else, we want to learn a little bit of meditation and breath work because we want to bring that parasympathetic baseline down. You know, we want to have it there more than not. And, you know, we're fine episodically to have a sympathetic spike, whether that's something excitement, you know, that happens in life, or even like a big sporting event or workout. But like most of the time, we should be chill. And that's, you know, so we worked on that. Talked a little bit about sleep, which was actually pretty good, but we put in a few more of those popular sleep hygiene practices, you know, cool, dark bedroom, evening ritual, screening light, addressing that in the PM, getting some morning sunlight for its circadian clock reset value, which also has this, you know, again, hormonal regulation, metabolic bouncing effect. So we did that. And you know, you're like, man, these things don't sound like, you know, crazy things, you know. As is typical with many clients like that, particularly women, they eat pretty well. You know, they just don't eat a lot of junk food. They're not junk food bingers. They're usually very intelligent and very aware. But also with a lot of ladies, it's like, you're not eating enough protein. You know, we put it on the tracker and, you know, say, okay, so now, so we up the pro. So, okay, here's what we've done so far. We've addressed stress and sleep just a little bit. We've increased protein, and then we looked at the training. It's like you're crushing yourself, you know. And again, just because of motivation. And so it's like, well, what do you do? Well, I mean, I got this busy day, so you know, I get up at 5, and you know, the kids are getting older. You know, they can take care of themselves in the morning. My husband's, you know, a little bit later, so I, you know, I head to the gym and just you know, pound it in a high intensity class or workout, and then, you know, head on off to the office. And I said, well, what are you doing? So it's basically like just every day was just like an hour of power. You know, it's just like just hard intervals. You know, it's just intense stuff. And so, okay, so we want some of that in the balance. We just don't want that much of it. And so I said, let's make a couple changes here. Let's only do the hard stuff like twice a week, and let's trim it. Let's cut that back by half. You know, so it's like, oh, you know, instead of doing an hour of intervals, let's do a half hour of intervals. So you got to compromise with people. Then let's keep you exercising, because everybody, if you love exercise, let's not talk you out of doing training. But let's go to the gym. Let's do a little bit more mobility work, and make sure that we're doing appropriate amounts of strength training to stimulate, you know, the lean muscle. You know, gain and maintenance. Let's keep the cardio really low intensity. Otherwise, you know, it's in like zone one, two at the most. You know, we just don't need to do a lot more than that. You know, so we just made those changes. So I didn't really take away her workout bug. I just modified it so that the intense stuff was there, but it was briefer, and then everything else was just more supportive of it. And the very last thing that we added was GDA. And I was like, well, you know, like, your heart rate's cranking along all day long because she's got, you know, again, wearables and trackers and stuff. But that's partly just due to like dynamic stuff at work and stress. So if we can pull your baseline down, you know, this parasympathetic thing, that's going to help, certainly going to help with the cortisol. But also, let's sneak in these movement snacks, you know, rev that metabolism just a little bit. So what's that look like? Man, it's just a couple minute walk here and there. With a lot of execs, I like to put a kettlebell under the desk and just have them bang out a few swings here and there. You don't get sweaty, you have to change out or anything, you know. So we put all that in, and okay. And I said, let's not be in a rush either. You know, let's do this, you know, over some amount of time, probably not gonna take a year. Actually, you don't, with a motivated person, there you go, compliant. It only took about 5 months. She lost every one of those 28 pounds or so that she was looking to lose. And then she, you know, was talking about, well, now this is great because, you know, I can go to the beach with my family and not feel awkward about being in a swimsuit, and I feel great, and I'm doing I'm even feel like I'm accomplishing and contributing more through much of life. And I was like, well, man, that's awesome. That's, I mean, I learned from this experience as well. And so that's a good example. And then this other example, it's going to really revolve around the flex day. So a lot of people will recognize the term cheat day, you know, and it's popular in bodybuilding. You know, it's like, well, okay, every once in a while, maybe it's once a week, you have this cheat day where, you know, you can just cheat on your diet and, you know, do whatever you want. You also hear people who are in body comp phases, they'll talk about it's a carb refeed day, you know, so they're just going to refuel a little bit to reverse diet and jack up the metabolism again and stock the glycogen stores. Yeah, all that's valid. I like the word flex day because for me, it's like, okay, cheat has just sort of like a negative connotation to it. But flex is like, okay, today I can flex if I want to. And so how we set up the flex day, it's in Lean for Life, and I do it with all the clients. It's like, well, one day a week, if you need to flex, you can flex. You can flex one meal, which is actually better than 95% consistency in your program. Or you can flex three meals. If you're a three meal a day, or you might be a two or a four. That's still like 86%. And that's a passing grade at most public institutions. So the point that I'm making is like, you can flex. So people will say, well, what's my flex look like? I said, well, it's up to you. You know, you can, again, if like there's this ritual, it's like, oh, you got to have pizza and beer on Friday nights. Okay, go ahead and do it. You know, you can look forward to that. You know that it's not going to ruin everything. And then what tends to happen over time is people really start to feel from eating that earth-based diet how good they feel. And then I don't feel quite as good when I eat too much of the quote-unquote, you know, junk, fast, or processed food. Well, a lot of times they'll just make healthier choices and just they need to flex less over time, but because psychologically they know they can flex if they have to, it takes the stress and takes away the confinement. And so yeah, you know, you're at the birthday party or whatever and like, okay, here comes the cake, well, this will be my flex. And so that's kind of how this works, and I think that's one of those critical, it's well supported by the literature, you know, ways to keep things sustainable and practical. But the story, man, I was working with a guy, and I don't do too much of this, but it was a medical weight loss case. And so he came in at 460. That's 460 pounds of human. And, you know, too young. I mean, nobody should be that weight, but just in a bad way. And, you know, a guy, you know, in his late 30s and almost can't move, you know, his the weight is so stressful. You know, he can't go out and walk for fitness. He can't walk. The only exercise he can do is get in a pool and do deep water exercise. It's 460 pounds. Blood pressure's going through the roof. Pre-diabetic. You know, the whole spiel, the metabolic syndrome. And I got involved. And so in this case, I said, well, okay, like, you know, I love that water exercise, you know, and, you know, maybe we can do it twice a day, you know, just let's shoot for like, you know, 11 times a week or something, you know, so that's really helping. But the one thing that we put in there was a really good, you know, program using the EBD, very specific about calories, keeping a caloric deficit, tracking, communicating, and that was good, plus the flex day. Well,
yes.
So about 6 months go by and, you know, we're communicating all the time, but I had just never really thought to like dive into, hey, you know, what are you doing for your flex day, man? So about 6 months in, he's already lost 100 pounds. And because that's not uncommon, you know, when someone's that heavy, you know, the weight loss can be very rapid initially. And I was like, wow. So one day we're having one of our meetings and I was like, hey, what, how you flexing? And he's like, oh yeah, you know, I've been using the flex day pretty much every week. And I said, so what do you have for breakfast? And he says, six ice cream sandwiches. And then I say, what about lunch? And then he says, six ice cream sandwiches. And then I say, dinner? And he says, six ice cream sandwiches. So
That's funny.
I'm like, so you're having 18 ice cream sandwiches a day, and you lost 100 pounds. And he's like, yeah, it's amazing how this works. And so was like, well, that's probably not wouldn't have been my first choice, but like that is
Sure.
what worked for this guy because he had some relationships with food that ultimately got refined, and he no longer needed to do that. But for the first 6 months, what he was able to tell himself is like, look, I can eat this caloric deficit. I can eat this EBD. It's actually good food. And he was a good cook, obviously. And, as many people who are 460 are. And it would all work, as he says, because I know I can eat, I can eat anything I want, but I'm going to eat my favorite thing, which is a 6-pack of ice cream sandwiches 3 times on that flex day. And again, it didn't, that went away over more time, but I was stunned. I was
Sure.
like, wow, man. This is really the law of averages, and it's very interesting how if you do enough of the right things for metabolic health, even in a case like that, you can get away with something once in a while. And that's even more true in, like, again, let's say someone who already is quote unquote lean for life and is, really got the whole training thing balanced is like, well, that person. A lot of people might even be jealous of them. You'll see them and say, like, how come that person can get away with occasionally eating stuff like this? And they're, they seem so casual about it. You go out and they're having like, whatever, and somebody else orders the salad. And, well, it's probably because they have good relationships and they're sleeping well and they're happy and their hormones are balanced and they've got some decent exercise. And most of the other time they're eating pretty good and or their genetics are just giving them a little bit of a favorable bump there. But yeah, there's some cool stuff that we get into. And ultimately it's just all about like, feeling good about yourself. It's so important. And that's just where it works, and I feel it's just such a joyous occasion to hang out with people on these types of journeys.
Yeah, I mean, both of those success stories, which thanks for sharing, love to hear both of them. It the program, the Lean for Life program, the comprehensiveness of it accounted for both of their I don't know if this is right exactly, but psychological, the mind, the way the mind sort of interacts with the program for health and nutrition, and really allow both of these people with very different goals to get into the sweet spot for them mentally more than anything. And I think that that's especially the last situation, that certainly, the flex day, the idea of it, it really supported that sustainability, which you talked about earlier. So, John, thanks for sharing. Loved all that. Is there anything that we didn't hit today regarding Lean for Life that we should have?
Well, we covered a lot, and thank you for that, by the way, PK. But
Yeah.
I would say there's just one thing coming up that some folks might really be interested in. That is the Earth-Based 30. So this Friday, March 1st, we're within the community, within the app, we're kicking off the Earth-Based 30. So that's a 30-day diet challenge where you basically get in with your peeps and support through the app and do 30 days of dedicated earth-based diet food consumption, again, based on your lever. So we've got some documents that are coming out that the app members have available to decide whether, oh, well, I'm going to eat 2 meals or 3 meals or 4 meals per day. And my goal is to lose or maintain or gain. And I am going to go in the macro realm with higher carb, lower fat, or I'm going to go the other way. So we've got some things that they can download and put on the refrigerator and say, okay, here's my meal
Oh,
plan for the week.
nice.
Here's my shopping list for the week. And then we're going to you not everybody needs to use trackers long term, but for a month, we're going to use trackers like MyFitnessPal or Chronometer or whatever people like, and figure out like, okay, well, this is what I'm trying to do. This what my my food plan is, and then there'll be daily notifications to the through the community to help them, as well as some other supportive content in the weekly programming. Also, the goals could be anything. I mean, I've already heard from a couple people. Well, I want to see if doing this can knock my blood pressure down a little bit, or I'm going after my resting pulse. So it's not always, you know, that we're using quote unquote the tight pants test, which is actually quite valid and good to do about once a week in certain cases. The one thing, you know, I joke around a lot, as you know, but like I'll tell people, hey, but the, you know, be careful, because if you've got some tight pants and you're using those to assess your, you know, adipose tissue reduction. So for, you know, most ladies, that's going to be butt and thighs, and for guys, it's the gut. The tight pants might work. But if you're in the training tribe right now, and we're in the strength and hypertrophy training block, and we're doing a lot of heavy resistance training, it jacks up the buttock. And so, you know, you might be like, oh, the pants, they still don't fit that well, but they're, but, and there's a pun there. There could be a very good reason for that.
I love that. I love that. Okay. Well, that's fantastic. It's exciting and it's very timely. So you can use the Lean for Life principles and get on the train for the Earth-based 30. I love it.
Yeah. So more information will be coming out. I'll probably have a post at the end of the week as well. So, okay. You know, make it easy for people to find us. And you can, like, I know I mentioned it earlier, but you can go to the website, thelifetimeathlete.com and learn some more things. But ultimately, it's just so easy to go to the App Store or Google Play, download the app, and then join in, because this is just one of the many cool things we're doing over the year and multiple years.
I love it. Absolutely, John. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for laying that out. And it was fun hopping back on today.
Thank you, PK. Thanks again for joining me today. If you're digging the vibe, rate, review, subscribe, and share the show with other incredible people just like you. Visit thelifetimeathlete.com and explore my one-on-one coaching services, our courses, the nationwide online group training community, The Training Tribe, and my book, Animal Fit, the body type assessment and training system like no other that helps you to unleash your inner beast and unlock your athletic potential. Check us out on YouTube and Instagram at The Lifetime Athlete. Have a fantastic day, and I'll see you next time.